I got shooters touch. Can't nobody ball like me.
I was getting a lot of no letters. And I kept some of the letters because it was like motivation for me.
I was young in my coaching career. I did know that those guys I was coaching, this was their one opportunity.
If you really want the players to like you, just make them better.
If I want to keep playing this game, you know, as a job, I have to continue to get better at that.
You have to figure out a way to carve out some value that you have that you can bring not only to your team but also your profession.
It's really good information, and I pick up little nuggets all the time.
For me, it's all about confidence, man. You have to have confidence to be a shooter, to be a basketball player in general, to have success. It's all about confidence. If they walk a mile in my shoes, then they can ball like I do. But my game different, not the same
with it. I travel now, y'all just change pivots. Shooters, welcome into another episode of the Shooters Touch podcast. The weather changed a little bit this week, starting to feel more like fall, which means basketball is right around the corner. We're excited. We hope you're excited. Excited to get this season going. If you haven't had an opportunity or if you're new to the podcast, please jump back and listen to some of our past conversations we've had with amazing coaches and players. There's a lot of gems in there, and so hopefully you can find a few that you like and really connect with. But today, we bring on Brian Bender. And yes, Brian spells his name the correct way, with a Y, of course. He is the head coach at Ellsworth Community College and doing big things up there in Iowa Falls. He's got a really cool story, a cool path for him to get to that position, and a really neat opportunity for him to continue to grow and make an impact, not only in Iowa Falls, in that league, but in the game of basketball. And so this one was fun. We think you're going to learn a lot from this, a lot to take away. We hope you enjoy it. As always, shooters, shoot. Fourth quarter down three, need a 2-1.
Better call on me. If you know you need... Coach Brian Bender, welcome to the Shooter's Touch.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Coach, we're excited to have you. Excited to learn a little bit more about your story. Usually when we bring coaches on, oftentimes it's their first podcast, but this is not the case for you. You're familiar with the podcast. Tell us a little bit more about that and how you kind of got ringed into to hosting and doing podcasts with Rising Coaches Incorporated.
Yeah, great question. Yeah, usually I'm on the other end of this, but I'm excited to answer some questions today instead of ask them. But no, so, you know, I kind of date it back. So I started, you know, don't hate me for this, but I started the University of Minnesota. So I was a Gopher, started as a student manager in 2005, that fall, worked there for 8 years. And while I was there, I started doing some video work. So I was a manager, GA, video coordinator, but you know, my sophomore year, Dan Munson got fired midseason. Jim Molinari took over. And here was this 19-year-old young man that loved basketball and loved being in the office. And they, you know, basically treated me like a full-time employee while I was in school. So I started to do video. And prior to Synergy existing, so Synergy Sports now does a lot of analytical breakdown and does all your video and cumulative stats and all different things for you on the computer. We had to do it all manually. And so, you know, we had 10 DVD decks and we recorded every single game on TV, college basketball games with anticipation of making the NCAA tournament. And we had a DVD library. And so this DVD library helped me meet a lot of different coaches. And so a lot of these guys are similar in my positions, managers, GA, video guys, maybe some operations guys at lower level schools. And we started building a network. And so three of those guys were at Clemson, and Andy Farrell and Adam Gordon. And then they had another guy, Brandon Rosenthal, who just was at Arizona State this past season as an assistant. Those three guys founded this organization called Rising Coaches. And so my first summer when I became a video guy, Tubby sent me to Vegas for a convention, and it was tied with Rising Coaches and the, you know, Exos convention. So that was like, there was Sports Code, there's Exos, there's a couple other ones, but TV Sport, but Exos was the main one. So I went to Vegas and I got to know these guys. There's like 20 young guys in that room. And we've all kind of gone in different directions. You know, some of us are still in college, some are in the NBA now. Some of them got out of coaching, doing high school stuff, but so those guys from the ground up, we did like a watch party that next spring at the Final Four, and there's like 15 of us. So I'm like an OG of Rising Coaches. And so when Adam Gordon quit coaching at SEMO, he became the CEO there and with Rising Coaches, and they, you know, they asked me if I would be interested in hosting the podcast and selling some sponsorship on the side. Kind of went hand in hand, you know, didn't make much if any money at all, but was able to have that platform for a year. And then, you know, I got this job this past spring and things got a little bit busy. And so I just kind of, you know, slowly kind of fizzled away from it. But, you know, I really enjoyed being the podcast host. You know, got to pick your guests and do different things. Sometimes that was stressful, but at the same time, like, you know, you had to prepare for questions. And, you know, I kind of had my go-to questions and answers and different things we got to talk about. But it was great to get our program started, get my name out there. You know, I worked for Toby Smith, who's now retired. Ron Jersa was one of our assistants, now retired. Vince Taylor out of the business. So a lot of my coaching tree, Yancey Walker, Chad Van Reesen, you know, Thomas Gray, a couple other guys that I've worked for, Jim Fox, who's now out at App State. So like my tree is kind of Rising Coaches, or kind of my own. I'm starting my own tree, being a younger head coach, but Rising Coaches was my family. And so I was really grateful to put their name out there. And I thought I did the best job that I could to get good guests and ask good questions.
That's awesome. No, we're definitely going to enjoy having that experience on the podcast here tonight and be able to talk and understand a little bit of where we're coming from on this side as well. And so that's awesome. So you mentioned it. I want to bring it up right away. What was it like with Tubby? Obviously, everybody knows Tubby, Hall of Famer. What was it like being around, working from, and ultimately, what was probably the biggest thing that you took away from your time there under his tutelage?
Yeah, so he's, you know, as you grow in the profession and you notice that money sometimes will change people, it did not change Tubby Smith. He's probably one of the most genuine human beings there are on the planet. He was one of 16 or 17 kids, and he stayed with that type of grounding humility. And he was able to share that with his players, his staff, his managers. He treated everyone with respect. He knew my mom's name. He would ask about my family. And, you know, someone like that doesn't usually have time for something like their individuals, you know, specifically bottom guys on their totem pole, but he genuinely cared. So that would be the one thing that I'd take away from him. You know, obviously it was a unique situation. He was, you know, a little bit older school, and that was a time when transfers started to come about, and you've probably seen some quotes by him and different things, but you know, that guy could coach. He was probably one of the best practice coaches I've ever seen. He was intense. You know, he would get down in a stance. That dude could make, he was in his 60s and he was doing the slides and he was active in practice. He was sweating. He was throwing backdoor passes. He had the time of his life being out there on the floor. But, you know, he was a very good basketball coach. He did a lot of things in game that you didn't really at the time. You're like, why is he doing that? And it worked, you know, but he was a phenomenal practice coach and really fun to work for. And I enjoyed it thoroughly. And I actually had an opportunity to go with him when we got fired of all things. We made the NCAA tournament, beat UCLA, and lost to Florida in the round of 32, and we got fired the next day. So our business is crazy, and that's when I started coaching junior college. So kind of, you know, he's been a big supporter of mine, and I think he's offered to come out here and speak for us at Ellsworth. And you know, when the time is right, I'll bring him out here. And he's retired, just a great guy, man, great guy. And I was very fortunate to work for him.
That's really, really cool to know that sometimes those legends that we, you know, all look up to are really as good as you think that they should be behind the scenes. And so it's cool to hear that story. Talking about behind the scenes, what about the barn? Tell me a little bit about this. So this is pre-renovation, right? I mean, that place, what was it like? I mean, going down those stairs from the floor, I mean, what was behind the curtain? Let us in.
So there's a lot of pieces to it. So there's a lot of nooks and crannies in that building. You know, I won't say some of the stuff we did to get some friends in there every once in a while, but we had, you know, I had the keys to the gym at 18. It was freaking awesome. You know, you get keys to a gymnasium that was like every kid's dream. And, you know, you guys are called the Shooter's Touch, you know, and that's where I learned how to shoot on that Dr. Dish machine there late at night with different players. They would be done. I'd shoot a couple hundred extra, but, no, the barn was awesome. You know, obviously a really cool environment. My freshman year, I had to film and, you know, so you would be up there filming and the building would shake, like literally the film would like shake with you during those high intense moments and games. You know, I was obviously when we played Illinois and Iowa, Wisconsin, you know, the rivalry type games, and Michigan State was always good in those years, Purdue. So, you know, always really competitive games and a fun environment to be in. With the elevated floor, I only slipped once. Once I did get on the floor of those 7 years after that, I wasn't filming. So pretty cool, unique place to watch a game, unique place to be. And it was pre-renovation. So the worst part about all the barn, we could talk about it, was in the summer, there was no AC. And we had Tubby Smith basketball camps for 6 summers. And dude, I'll tell you what, I've never seen so many kids walking like they're ducks after they've been shaping all that week, you know, being in that hot gymnasium with no AC. But that was the toughest part about it. But, you know, really cool environment to be a part of. You know, there's leaks and there's different things that people don't know about. But, you know, having a key to that gym was awesome. And, you know, I probably took more shots in that gym than any player that's ever lived there. So I was there for 8 seasons. That's a long time.
That's awesome. I'll tell you, the first time I went and saw a game at the Barn, I was pretty young. My parents and I went up, and unfortunately, my mom got the seat right behind the pole, and so I think she watched the whole game on a little screen because she couldn't even see the one side of the court because of the way that the wrap those poles came down. I know there was some, you talked about some awkward spots and awkward seating in that place, but it was definitely cool. And so was practice in there too, or did you guys have a practice facility, or how'd that work?
My time was pre the Village. They've done a phenomenal job since, you know, not saying after we left, but they have a lot more resources before, you know, but when we left, you know, Tubby fought for a practice facility and we never really got one. We would practice sometimes in the sports pavilion. So if you envision this, so the Barn used to be an indoor football facility. And so it was at least 140 yards long. And with that, they split it. They used to do everything in Williams, and, you know, women's basketball used to be in the pavilion and do different things. So they split the building basically into 2/3 and 1/3. And so sometimes we would practice in sports pavilion, but then in the era with Lindsay Whalen and Janelle McCarville and a couple other players, they sold out the pavilion. So they moved over to Williams with it. So that became like a dual purpose facility. And obviously they did wrestling and gymnastics and volleyball. Now everyone has basically their own. I don't think they practice in there as much, but the new venue that they have, the men's and women's both have their own separate thing. They have their own separate weight room now. It's really, really nice. I still know a couple people that still work over there. And, you know, once a gopher, always a gopher. So, you know, I could have a sour feelings as I want about being let go there. That was still, you know, where I grew my roots. And, you know, I love my time there. I love Minneapolis. I met my wife there. So, you know, all good things there.
A native of Wisconsin though, correct? Mm-hmm. Are you originally from Wisconsin? So take us through this then. How do you go from Wisconsin to making your way to the U, as they call it up there in Minneapolis?
That's a great question. So I grew up in, you know, I was born in Chicago, you know, suburb of Illinois. Then we moved to Rockford. My mom always wanted to have a farm. And so when I was in third grade, we moved to a small town, you know, about smaller than Iowa Falls even, but it was called Cambridge, Wisconsin. And went there from third grade on. And when I was a senior in high school, we were okay financially, but we weren't in great shape, but we weren't like poor by any means where we grew up. So we were stable. And I wanted to get away from home, but I couldn't really afford it. And so University of Minnesota and the Dakotas and Wisconsin had reciprocity. So I could go in state to Minnesota. And so I wanted to get as far away from home. And honestly, I was watching a basketball game, and Tanner Brunson was a manager at Wisconsin, and he made the team. And it just so happened at the halftime of that game, they did like a documentary on him. And I was like, I want to be a manager. That sounds really cool. So my uncle actually played football at Minnesota. So I got in touch with them, the basketball office, when I first got up there. I was told no like 5 times, and they just said, stop coming, you come to practice. So started working my freshman summer, maybe it was like October, it was right before the season started. And you know, so Minnesota was in-state tuition, it was far enough away from home, it was 4 hours, and I could be a part of cool athletics. And you know, so with that combination of those three things, you know, obviously I went there for, you know, I was going to be elementary ed, but 2 weeks into school I changed my major to sport management, knew there was a major for coaching, so that's what I did, and haven't looked back.
That's awesome. That's really cool. A neat story. So did you grow up a Badger though then, or where did your alliances fall as a kid?
I love the Chicago Bulls. I was when that Last Dance documentary came out, I swear it was made for me. Like that was my life. I love the Bulls. Yep. I have a calendar, everything about it. My dad would take me to Bucks games and Bulls games and Brewer games and all different things growing up. And, you know, just really enjoyed the camaraderie of sports. And my dad coached a little bit, and, you know, coaching, I wouldn't say it was in my blood, but it was like something that I knew I wanted to do. And, you know, I was never a tall guy in stature. So, you know, I'm only 5'8" now. You know, I was probably the last kid in high school to hit puberty. Like I was just small. And so, you know, you had to do things that were different. And mine was, I love kids and I love to, you know, teach and coach. And so I knew from a young age, I have papers dating back to middle school saying, hey, my dream is to coach, you know, college basketball, and I'm doing it. So I've loved every second of it. You know, it's not the most conventional path, but, you know, we'll see where everything kind of ends up, you know, when it's all said and done, my career's over. But I've enjoyed this journey and being a part of the game. And it's been, you know, a blessing for me, and really enjoyed all the impact that we've been able to do through this game.
That's amazing that you had that understanding or belief that that's what you wanted to do at such a young age. It, you know, it feels like, and obviously, you know, too, working with young men for quite a while, to the clarity to really know what they want to do is not something that often comes easy. And so kind of knowing that, hey, this is what I'm going to do. And then, like you said, just kind of keep showing up until, okay, yeah, get here and do this. Okay, you're a video coordinator, to just continue to work your way up, you know, throughout the ranks at a very young age. And like you said, now having an opportunity, you know, to be the head of your own program, which I know you already had prior to getting to Ellsworth as well. And so that's a really, really neat story to hear and to learn a little bit more about. So growing up then, was sports a part of your life? Is it something that you played? Is that when you kind of started to gain your knowledge around basketball?
Yeah. So, yeah, I started a baseball guy. You know, my dad loved baseball. And then, you know, I was pretty fast. Like, I was little and fast. So soccer kind of was a sport that, you know, we could play in a smaller town. And, you know, I obviously loved basketball. I've been playing since second grade. And I always had a hoop in the barn, you know, outside. And, you know, it was good. So, you know, it was one of those things where, yeah, I played sports growing up, but I knew deep down I always wanted to coach. And even like my senior year of high school, I was like the seventh, eighth man, but the coach would be like, hey, sit next to me. Like, let's hear what you got to say. And, you know, and we'd have some ideas and different things. Like, I felt like I was coaching even when I was a young, you know, senior. And then one of my first couple of jobs was working camps. And I actually started my own when I was a senior in high school. We did a soccer camp. I had like 80 kids signed up. I had to hire a staff. It was awesome. Like, I didn't even know what I was doing, but we kind of figured it out on the fly. And then my uncle in Chicago ran a couple camps. So he ran a soccer, basketball, and volleyball camp. And so every summer I would go and I'd live with him for, you know, 4 to 6 weeks of summer, and would go and, you know, would coach and do the things with little kids. And then in the afternoon I would train, because he was a soccer trainer. So I do, you know, stuff with him, train, and he lived a different life than the farm boy life. He lived in a city and it was cooler. We ate out. We never had to eat inside all the time, and, you know, family dinner. It was different. It was unique. So it was kind of living a city life on a farm kid, and, you know, became more diverse. And then when I went to college, you know, it completely changed, you know, a lot of things. You don't always get that diversity when you're in a small town in Wisconsin, Iowa, you know, different places. So it was a really cool experience.
That is neat. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because you had to have done some summer camps or something to keep that fire lit, to know, you know, once you got on campus at Minnesota, that like, hey, this is something that I want to, you know, continue to pursue. Like you said, gotten in to be a manager, which is often a good first step in that coaching rank, so you can take advantage of that opportunity to learn and grow. And so that's amazing. That's awesome. That's fun to hear your path. And so then what happened? So after Minnesota, fill us in there. You talked about you guys making a nice run in the NCAA tournament, but then unfortunately, obviously not nice enough. Yeah. This is a tough business, and it kind of sent you looking. And so where did the path take you next?
Yeah, we went to 6 postseasons in 8 years in my time, and 3 NCAA tournaments, 3 NITs, went to the final round of the NIT, you know, different things, made the NCAA tournament. And, you know, obviously, like, you want to, at different levels, have different standards and expectations. You know, there's the mid-tier programs at the high major level that are always going to be behind the teams that have the most money. And you can see it right now in the realignment with all the college football and what's going on right now. It's going to be a struggle for some of these high major minuses, and they're not even getting picked up. And that's where kind of Minnesota was. But after that was over, I, you know, when I was at Minnesota, I interviewed literally, I could probably, I haven't saved them anymore, but there was probably 40 no's. I interviewed to be a head coach at high schools. I interviewed to be a Division II assistant, director of one, D1 assistant jobs, D1 director of operations jobs, you name it. I tried to get them and I couldn't get them. And the same answer was, hey, you haven't coached, you haven't played, you know, you didn't play, you didn't coach, you know, you haven't recruited. And, you know, for me, one of those things was that recruiting piece. And I had never recruited before. And so, you know, the opportunity to be I was a volunteer coach. I got paid nothing to coach. I went to Missouri State West Plains, a junior college, D1, really good program. I lived in the dorm and ran the dorm at night. I ran the study hall program. And then I taught six credits a semester to make like 18 grand or something like that. And so I could start coaching. So I was a volunteer coach, did that for a year. We had an unreal team. Now we didn't win at a high level, but we had, I think, 12 D1 players on that team. And, you know, it's crazy. And so that April, I wasn't even there for a full year. I think I was there like May to April. A good friend of mine. So I worked with USA Basketball for a summer. So if you see what's trending right now is some stuff on Bob McKillop and the Steph Curry camp. So obviously that Steph Curry documentary came out. I swear, like, I was there for that run because I worked for Bob McKillop that prior summer. And with USA Basketball, I was basically a student manager for 16 days with USA Basketball and got to know his assistant coach. So dating back to your old question, I didn't even really answer it, but I was never a Badger at heart. You know, I never was. You know, a lot of people went to the Badgers. I liked the Gophers, but I didn't really have a team. I liked Dwayne Wade with Marquette during those years and different things. So I went to different games. Wow. I never really had a college allegiance. My dad loved the Badgers, and he still loved them even when I worked in Minnesota. So, like, he would always make fun of me. But Minnesota would always lose to Wisconsin football. So, anyways, to get it back to where it was. So, Bob McKillop, they make the run. I got to meet Jim Fox. And Jim Fox was associate head coach at Davidson. He's in the documentary, too. And Coach Fox was at Villa 7, which is a, you know, top coaches in the country, soon to be head coaches. And so what it was hosted at Minnesota my last year there. So I was actually fired at the time, but they couldn't fire me because I was union. So I was the only person on the staff that didn't get fired besides the secretaries. And so, but they reassigned me. I worked for Tino for 3 days. And he basically said, I got my own video guy. You can go home. So I didn't work for like 3 weeks. And then they called me and said, hey, you got to come back to work. You're going to work in IT. So I signed up to work Villa 7 as an IT guy. So I filmed it. But I got to sit in and listen to Bruce Weber, as Lon Kruger, as all these different guys. And I hung out at night and did all the microphone stuff. So I set it all up and I got to listen. Well, here I am. I'm mingling and working with these guys. And one of the guys I got really close with was Jim Fox. Jim Fox, they make that run with Davidson. And then a few years later, they continue to win. And so then Fox gets the job at App State. So he calls me up. I try to get on with him. And he literally went a month cold. So I thought I was trying to be an assistant, talking to him, a month with nothing, literally nothing. And then out of the blue, he just called me and said, hey, you want to come? And I was like, seriously? Like, you didn't even interview? He goes, no, you don't have an interview. You want to come be my ops guy? I was like, sure. So literally 4 days later, I was there, packed up my U-Haul, dragged my car, drove 14 hours in U-Haul, parked it in a Walmart parking lot for a night. Had a week to find a place to live. He gave me one night in a hotel, stay with an assistant, you know, and I was there for 3 years as a director of operations. So after 3 years, you know, the times have changed. And I think if I was younger now, I would have done my path differently. But at the time, you had to do it this way. So as an operations guy, you know, you weren't allowed to be on the floor. You couldn't recruit. But one of our coaches was sick for a while. Another one had a baby. And so I got to go out a little bit. And I enjoyed it. I loved recruiting. After 3 years of that, you know, I wouldn't say like it was going south, but, you know, they ended up getting let go 2 years later, I think. But I wanted to coach again. And so a good friend of mine that worked one of our camps at Tubby Smith basketball camps was the head coach of Southwest Mississippi. And so known him for a long time, his assistant. So here, I'm going to date it back one more thing. This is really a unique story. I'm driving my U-Haul to App State. I get a call from Thomas Gray, the head coach of Southwest Mississippi. He goes, I'm leaving UT Martin. I'm going back to Southwest. I'm going to be the head coach. Would you want to be my assistant? And I was like, dude, I can't. I'm in the U-Haul, like driving to North Carolina. And the job paid way more in North Carolina. I was going back to U-1. I was like, no way I'm going. My wife would have killed me, you know, if I went back to Mississippi. But anyway, so he goes, hey, do you know anyone else? I said, Andy Farrell. He just got let go at Longwood. He'd be a great hire for you. Andy Farrell was a rising coaches guy. So Andy Farrell goes to Southwest Mississippi. He's there for 3 years. And they turn the program around. They do a really good job. I see Andy at the Final Four. He's like, hey, Bender, I'm going back to Dayton. You got a month head start if you want this job. I know you're trying to get back into coaching. So I had a month to persuade my wife to move to Mississippi. And so we prepped and did it. And talking to Thomas, he goes, hey, if you come here, there's a good chance in a year that I will be gone and you could be the head coach. And I was like, when hearing those words, so I took a $12,000 pay cut to go be an assistant at Duke. And was there for 10 months, and I was the head coach. And so I was the head coach there for, it was 4 seasons. And, you know, learned a ton, did a lot there. We, you know, produced a lot of players. You know, it was a bottom third job in terms of resources, but we were able to recruit there, did a really good job, found our niche with, like, finding one and done freshmen, developing players faster. But in Mississippi, you could only have three out of staters. And so me being not a Mississippi guy, I was the only head coach, I was the youngest head coach in the league. And I was the only one besides one other that wasn't from Mississippi out of 15 schools. And so like there would be things that would happen and I had no control over. I could be the greatest recruiter in the world. And there's certain things that I wasn't going to compromise my standards or do, or not being from Mississippi or didn't have the network or being at a school, you know, in a certain region of the state. And so there was a lot of challenges with the job. And so not saying I was trying to leave, but there was a lot of opportunities that came about that I swear I finished second at. You know, I could list them. It's over 10. National JUCO jobs, Division I assistant jobs, a lot of different things. And, you know, it was getting to the point where it was getting a little more stressful. We ended up having a baby during the pandemic. No family could come to see us. We're 16 hours from home. And, you know, there's just a lot of challenges. Now, I grew a lot. I loved every second of it. I liked the people there, you know, and I'm very grateful for that opportunity. But then my wife is, she works for a staffing agency and she got a benefit. You know, she did really well at her work. And so they gave her an incentive trip. Me and my wife are in Cancun on an incentive trip. And Ellsworth Community College coach resigns on hoop dirt. I'm like, what is that? So I Google Ellsworth. I had no idea where it even was. So I Google Ellsworth Community College, look, it's up in Iowa. And I was like, Christy, that's my wife. Christy, this job's 2.5 hours from the cities. And she goes, do you want it? And I was like, I don't know. Let's find out. Let's see what we got going on here. And so I started doing some homework, actually called the AD, got his cell phone number and, you know, continued to work on different things to try and get involved with the job. And, you know, happened to be coming up here for spring break for a couple of days visiting family. So I drove down. Did my real official interview and was lucky enough to get offered this position. So been here for 16 months. We had a really good first season. And, I would like to say like we've changed the culture. We are able to do a lot more things. I'm a big believer in people. And when I met some of the people here in this small town, this is a basketball town. You know, you have the Howard family. Scott Howard just won a championship with the Nuggets. Dale Howard used to coach, you know, in our circles of our JUCO league, and Steve Howard was on our committee. Jim Weitzel, who I actually interviewed with at Buffalo, was from this town, and you know, we continued to talk, and he was up here at 4th of July, and he's now at Albany. And you know, the Collison brothers, you know, Michael's the head coach in town here. Nick Collison works for the Thunder now, played in the NBA for a long time. So there's like they want to be good. They want to be good in basketball. You know, a lot of places, if you have football runs the world. And, you know, here, I feel like they're very invested in what we're doing as a community and at the college. And they've given me more resources to recruit and put a little bit more money into the program. We went and raised a lot, and then we brought new energy. You know, my staff is really enjoyable to be around. Ben Tanoff, my assistant, will probably be a head coach in a year. He had a couple opportunities this year, but he wanted to come back and run it back with me. And I'm very grateful for that. And we'll have a fun season this year. And then my other assistant, Dwayne Melton, another Iowa guy, he was at Quakerdale for a long time. And he's only 20 minutes down the road. So he works with me as well. And then we just hired another assistant that'll be official here this next week. My former assistant left, got a full-time D2 job. So I'm excited for him and the opportunities. But we got a good group. I'm excited to coach this team. Probably one of the best groups I've ever assembled as a head coach. And, we should have a really fun season and played really well this summer. We beat some really good junior colleges. We went 9-1. You know, they don't really track scores and different things. You know, I don't even know if you're allowed to report it. But, yeah. You know, we beat Chipola by 33 points. We beat Seward by 30 plus. We beat Kirkwood. We beat Iowa Western Tech. We beat Pearl River in Mississippi by double digits. We beat Northeast Mississippi, and those are all top 25 D1 teams or D2 teams. So, and I only had, 10 guys. I got another 10 coming. So it should be a fun season for us. You know, obviously everyone doesn't have all their pieces, you know, myself included, but, you know, it's optimistic with the group that we have. We're a little bit older. And this is the most people I've ever had return to a team. So Mississippi, I think the most I ever had was 5 in the program, coaches included. And so this year we have 11. So that's awesome. A lot, which should be fun.
No, that's awesome. I want to get into that too a little bit more and talk about what you're excited about. But so did you, your profile said, did you get hired on as a head coach at Ellsworth, or did you start as an assistant?
No, I was.
You are okay.
My name is the head coach. Maybe I got to go and edit my profile or something. Redo it. No, I came to be the head coach. Now the unique thing here, you know, is I'm also the director of residence life. So my dorm duties and responsibilities back in Missouri 10 years ago helped me become the director of residence life here and student engagement. So it's good. I get to know the students a lot better. We only have about, you know, there's like 350 that live on campus. So I know every single one of them. First, last name, where you're from, what sport you play, who you, what you look like. Shoot, I know half their parents from phone calls and stuff, but new challenges with the job, and I teach a few classes. So very well versed here, you know, do some more things in the community and such. So it's been a good little run. But yeah, came as a head coach, and, you know, hopefully I don't get demoted anytime soon.
It's always so interesting to hear those paths. And obviously every coach has a different path, but, you know, and obviously have with a different path, have different things that you learn along the way. So, you know, we talked about a couple of your mentors now, but who are, you know, one or two of those top mentors, and what have you learned from them over the years?
You're going to laugh at this. So during COVID, you guys were talking about doing Zooms and getting networked and meeting coaches when you couldn't meet face to face. So with the Rising Coach stuff, they put on these clinics, and there's two people that I got to know very, very, very well, have like authentic, real relationships with that I admire. And they're, one is the head women's coach at University of Barry now. She is at Eastern Carolina. Her name's Heather Macy. She's written a couple books. We've done a few things together in terms of like some side hustle business stuff. And we have something potentially in the works with some recruiting things that we're putting together. But she's one of the smartest people I've ever met. She focuses on emotional intelligence, EQ with her program, focuses on being an ultimate teammate and focusing on your core values. And so when I was in Mississippi, one of my assistants, Vince Thibodeau, who's now the head coach at Salem University D2, we put together, you know, our program plan of what it was going to look like. You know, I always have unique, crazy ideas. And the other guy that I look up to and admire, his name is Scott Savore. Scott works with businesses, individuals, and companies. And he has come up with his own leadership manifesto. He's the smartest guy I've ever met. And he pushes my needle. I brought him out to my team last year. I'm going to bring him out again. We probably talk once a month. If I ever make it big, I'm going to throw this guy a ton of money. Because he completely changed my whole entire perspective of my life and how I build habits and what I do, and changed my perspectives of what's important as a leader and building leaders rather than followers. And so everything that we do within our program honestly stems from my own ideas and these two individuals, and then a little bit of Thomas Gray, who was the head coach of Southwest when I was there. I dabble with Tubby, I dabble with Jim Fox, I dabble with Yancey Walker, some other guys. But those two people have made the greatest impact on how I live my life and how I run my program. And so the core values of what we do, how we make them tangible, how we recruit, the questions we ask within recruiting to filter out basically garbage. We don't, you know, we're a JUCO, but we don't run our program like a JUCO. We run our program like a Division One, because that's where we want to be. You know, our core values are passion, humility, discipline, which is PhD, which is highest level of education one can have. You know, I'm a passionate guy. You could probably hear it in my voice that I love what I do. Humility means it's not about us. And being an ultimate teammate, Heather Macy, you know, being able to have a little H in humility, you know, is being about other people, and sacrifice equals reward, you know, the different parts that go into it, and then it requires disciplines. So I have poor habits. I'm working on my habits every single day as a husband, as a man, as a, you know, as a father, as a coach, as a leader, and being able to ask better questions through your disciplines and habits. So, you know, a lot of the stuff that I've transitioned my life through, I've gone off, hey, hard work. You know, but elite performers never leave anything for chance ever. So you got to like take control, you know, take action, always be on offense. You know, we try and stay in that attack mode when we play and when we do academics, when we do stuff in our community, when I'm talking to anybody and everybody, because you can learn from anybody. And so changing those perspectives is how we kind of run our program. And then we focus on what we can control: effort, attitude, focus, communication. And so all those things. So those people that I look up to, those two people, changed my life. And, you know, you would think it would be coaches or, you know, a player circumstance. No, it's long-term, you know, it's changing your growth perspective. You know, you talk about the daily disciplines and get you to where you want to be, making your bed, different things, like just being weird, being uncommon. You know, that's the difference, I think, in how I'm able to do more with less, because this job at Ellsworth hasn't been that, you know, the job at Southwest hasn't been that. App State, bottom third job. Minnesota, bottom third job. Missouri State, West Plains, bottom third job. And what I'll tell you is if I ever do end up at a job that's not a bottom third job, and you combine some things, it could be, you know, a very unique perspective. But, you know, that's me. That's, you know, I'm a hardworking person. And, you know, we can say what we want about hard work. You know, there's a lot of people that work hard, but it's what you do with that hard work and how to make it, you know, contagious. How do you make it blend throughout your whole program? And that's what we've done, and it worked.
When you got to Owl Falls, when you got to Ellsworth, how did that message, how did that, you know, the PhD mindset, how did that hit those players that were coming back? Were they very open to it? Was it kind of hard to get that across to them? What did that look like?
So when I got the job, there was 12 people on the roster. You know, they were supposed to have 20. So there's 12 left. A couple were graduating. You know, I did workouts with them when I first got there. It was about a 1 month. I met with every single person and did like basically one-on-one interviews and made it all about them. And I could tell through 5 minutes if this is the person I want around or not. So there was a couple guys that graduated and moved on. I think there's four. So that leaves eight. And then there was four that I kept, and then four that just kind of, you know, kind of left it up to them. You know, it wasn't a phase get out of here, but it was one of those things, you don't fit us and I'm going to prove it here. Here's 1 week. This is what I want you to do. And four of them didn't show up and do it. So, they dug their own grave. Now they all have gone on different points. One's at NIAC, one went to school in Arizona. One got out, and then one went to Milwaukee area and won a national title. So, you know, they all went in different directions. But the four that I kept fit me. You know, Rich Ashu was an English kid. He ended up signing at Mary. Clayton Ubbin, who was an Iowa kid, Huxley kid, did a really good job for us. Didn't play a ton, but, you know, was a culture kid. He was the only one that showed up to help me move. Like, my type of guy, you know, hardworking blue collar, bag boy. Like, he was awesome. But he ended up signing at Upper Iowa. And then one guy got hurt, Mateo Martinez, who was in Clarion. And Teo, we ended up getting him a coaching job at the middle school down the street, and he implements some of the things that we did here, and he did really well with that seventh and eighth grade teams that he coached. And now he's full-time at Clarion coaching. He's coaching three sports the next year, and, you know, utilized it. And then another guy played spot minutes for us. But, you know, I brought in 18 new players, you know, over the course of a year. And, you know, I did the best I could and accelerated a way of learning what I can coach and bring here and what works here. And there were some things that we did really, really well. The team I built probably would have won Mississippi League, but it didn't. There was missing some pieces here. We didn't shoot the ball well. It's a little bit more Midwest basketball, where there's a lot more passing and a lot more posting up and physicality. And we were not overly physical. We were very thin and long and athletic. But we led the nation in block shots. We led the nation in offensive rebounding. We were one of the top defensive rebounding and defensive teams in the country. And we were like, we led the conference in scoring. We led the league in like so many categories. But when it came to beating Kirkwood, DMAC, Iowa Lakes, they were all older. So we were all freshmen. They were all older and they were thicker. And they moved the ball better. We had two really good guards, like really good. one went to Buffalo, one went to New Hampshire. We had five D1 players. The whole league had seven total. So we had five and seven, but we didn't win at the rate that we probably should have because of the pieces that we had were a little bit different. Talent doesn't win this league. You couldn't out-coach the league, out-talent the league, I guess. So learned a lot in year one and fixed it for year two. We have thicker players. We have older players. And the league is younger. You know, Iowa Lakes had four redshirt sophomores. They won the league. You know, I had all freshmen. And that was like COVID kids that had been in their program for 3 years. And Troy Lawson did a pretty good job. You know, Kirkwood, we split with them. But, you know, a little bit older group. You know, DMAC was a year, new coach, but they had won, you know, been in the national championship. They won the national title. And then the year after, they finished like third or fourth or fifth or something. They were top, you know, five and won a league. So, you know, for us, we want to get to that level. And Ellsworth, you know, hadn't had a winning record in 10 years. So, you know, there's different levels to it too now. Like when you show up in the gym and you're not supposed to win that game, like there's still some, you know, carry over and different things. So I think we've made our mark and people know who we are now, and should be a fun season for us.
What, I guess you mentioned a couple of the athletes you have coming in, and, you know, your almost recruiting strategy, but what is your recruiting strategy? Are you hitting Iowa hard? Obviously you have a lot of connections around the nation, but is there a certain area that you're hitting, or is it you're just looking for the people that match up to what you need on the roster?
Fit is huge. I have a scenario of what I want it to look like in my head. It's never going to be that. We never, you know, perfection. We can chase perfect Kobe, right? Chase perfection, but you're never going to get it. I would like a third of my team to be from Iowa. In a perfect world, that's what I would like. We have last dollar scholar program. We have great academics here. We have great support. Every kid that doesn't have an estimated family contribution of like basically over 150K, they can come to school for here for free, tuition free, which if I give them a scholarship on top of it, covers their rent. And now you got a full ride. Even if you had to pay a little bit, or a full Pell Grant kid. The one thing about Iowa Falls is we're one of the smallest towns in that has a community college. So our rent is not as expensive. So when I can offer a full tuition scholarship or piece it together, we have great academic money and different things. So you're able to get better packages to get them to where they want to be. Where if you're at, you know, Iowa Western's got six times as much money as I got, but their rent's 10 grand. I mean, good luck. You know, kid's going to pay 10 grand for rent. Well, my rent's five. You know, you can find a place in town that's $300 a month. Like you get, like there's ways to like do it differently. But kind of going with it of what it looks like. When I first got the job, I was so far behind, and finding size is impossible. So I went international. I've had a lot of connections internationally for a long time, basically a decade. I couldn't use them. I was in Mississippi for 5 years. You can only get three out-of-staters, and I only had two scholarships for those three. And then at App State, we had some international kids, but it wasn't my responsibility to recruit. Missouri State West Plains, at the time, JUCO had rules you could only have three international players. When I first got there, I actually signed two. But long story short, there's no restrictions anymore. So 11 of my kids last year were international.
Wow.
We went all big players, long, athletic. And then I like, you know, American guards. So, you know, for me, it was like an American guards with international bigs. And now I'd like to sprinkle in, you know, some good Iowa players that play the right way. They're going to go to class. They're going to do the right things. They're going to move the basketball. They're going to be able to shoot it. So, you know, for me, that's what I value. And then any kid with size, we're going to target them in-state, because there's nothing wrong with developing size. And so the more size that you have, I think the better it is. So, you know, for us, our starting point guard this year will be an Iowa kid, Jaron Cruz. He's a DMAC transfer. He hit me after the season was over, got released. He said, "Hey, coach, I love how you let your guards play. It looks like you guys have a lot more fun. Can I come play for you?" I was like, "Shit, you let us up for 26. Yeah, you can go. Come on." he's an Ankeny kid, and you know, he had a great summer, phenomenal summer, and he fits really well when you get really good pieces around him. And then we have two other Iowa kids, Jack Scrivener from Central Decatur, and then Andrew McNeese, who's a local guy, who will be fun to have around. You know, family's really involved with the community here, and you know, he's been a like six sport athlete, and he's never really focused on basketball, and he's got a chance to be pretty good. So great kid. He's going to work hard. And then, you know, everybody else is, you know, some Midwest kids, some guards, you know, from different places. And then we signed two D1 transfers. And then we signed another kid that was signed D1 in the fall, but didn't get in. Some fishy stuff happened, but then we got a few other international kids that are really freaking good. With D1 place, one kid here from Nigeria. That's, you don't see guys like him running around in Iowa, I'll tell you that. But pretty good players. But we're excited to have them. And, you know, but like I said, I'd like to have it look like a third, a third, a third. Probably a third American kids, a third Iowa, and then like a third international, just to fill in the pieces. But we're very fortunate here to, you know, be able to carry a large roster and be able to provide them with resources. And then, you know, we have a really good staff. And we do the best we can to develop all of them, whether you're my best player or my 20th man on the bench.
Yeah. What was a welcome to head coaching moment that you had? That transition from assistant to head, second seat to first. What was the moment you remember that's like, oh yeah, I'm the guy now.
There's a lot of things that I'm gonna say nicely. So we started 10-1 my first year, and we finished 13-12. Just imagine what happened.
Yep.
I can tell you stories after stories. We had guys get in trouble. We lost games that we probably shouldn't have lost. We blew 16-point leads. Like, I made so many freaking mistakes. No one really knew. And honestly, after the season was over, you lose 10 of 11. I thought I was going to get fired. And I'll never forget, I went into the president's office afterwards, and he basically, like, he didn't know everything. He had a good idea, but he didn't know, like, he didn't really know me. I wasn't from there. And, you know, I'm not from here, but people welcome me like, hey, I'm a local. Like, my family's involved. They love my kid. Like, the people here at the school are awesome. And people in town like me. And, like, I just feel loved here. In Mississippi, there were some challenges. Now, don't think I didn't like it. You know, my AD was really good, but my president, like, brought me in and he said a few things. And I was like, I walked out of there like I was the worst. Like, I just felt like I didn't do a good enough job. And I actually, like, was crying. Like, he didn't see me crying, but I was walking down the street to my office. And I saw one of my players. His name was Jalen Andrews. And he saw me. And Jay was like a local kid. He was like our 11th man. And he was going to be our captain next year. I just knew it just based off his personality. He ends up going to Cal State Fullerton. And he saw me, like, he could tell I was been crying, but I wasn't tearing up, you know, but he came in and gave me a hug. And he goes, Coach, that will never happen again. And it's kids like that that make you, like regardless of wins and losses. So Scott's Board, NATO, is this a terminology, not attached to outcomes. Like, it's about being present. It's about changing, you know, the direction of what you're doing every single day. You can't live in the past. You can't live in the future. You got to be present. And that moment, he reminded me of what it's about. And I haven't changed my ways since. So I figured out what I want to do with my core values, who I am. We weren't very grateful my first year. So my second year, our theme was grateful. My third year turned into PhD, and I had to look back at PhD because it's easier and it's more, you know, condensed, and clarity gives you power. So it's clear. And, you know, I love Jay to this day, but, like, he may have saved me because, like, there's different moments you say, like, first year head coach, whatever. Like, I never felt like I didn't know what I was doing, and I didn't know if I was ready, more or less basketball wise. I knew how to run a program. Shoot, I ran the program from ground up, basically, you know, setting up practice all the way to running the budget at App State. But, you know, calling those shots, standing up, I still got to be better with officials. And my intentionality with referees is extremely difficult. It sucks because I ref for a long time, so, like, I see things differently. But, you know, if I can get past that stuff, like, it's slowly but surely coming about, and I'm only 36, so, like, you just got to keep working at it and, you know, keep finding good kids that are going to give you that hug, that are going to go to bat regardless of the outcomes, that are going to empty their tank every single day for you because you know they love you, and vice versa. You know, that's what our business is about. And you know, regardless of the outcomes, I've been very fortunate to have a lot of guys go sign places and, you know, won some games, haven't won a championship, 18 years, never won one. So, you know, hopefully, you know, I always say our actions aren't wasted, they're only stored. Mm-hmm. So hopefully all these built up actions over time will get us to where we want to be.
Well, that's a pretty incredible story, Coach. You know, coaching guys that will be able or are able and willing to come up to you and, you know, give you that, you know, I guess a boost, you might say. So yeah,
y'all have those moments, like,
yeah,
you know, the things that you remember, whether it's, you know, a death in the family or a moment or a quote in a movie or a little shake, mm-hmm. a little arms go, you know, little hairs in your arm go up, you know, but that's what life's about, you know, is the impact that you can make on other people. And sometimes you don't realize the impact you're making as a coach because you're so consumed on winning and losing. And losing as a head coach, lonely, man, it's a lonely feeling, and you eat pizza and you feel like crap. But, like, you know, the goods outweigh any type of the bad. And, you know, you're impacting so many lives. You know, I've touched 250 kids in 18 years.
That's crazy.
Just a lot of people. It's only going to continue to go. And hopefully they can live a life that they want recorded and replicated and repeated, like I'm trying to do every day.
Yeah. Well, we'll maybe get to the pizza later. But I know you haven't been in the head seat for very long. But how, if any, has your philosophy changed over the years? X's and O's philosophy, on the court philosophy.
Yeah, good question. I have played primarily the same defensive. I think there's a little blend of Fox in there and then a little Tubby. But I've always kind of played to my personnel. So what I've changed every year is how I guard ball screens based on my picks. And so right now I have an idea how I want to play. But until these guys actually get off that plane, if they get here, I mean, the Nigerian, I won't know until, like, the day of school starting. You know, like, we'll see how our bigs look. We'll see what our strengths are defensively. But I've always been a little bit more conservative in terms, and then throwing stuff at you. So 1-2-2, done a little diamond press, done a little man press, and then change coverages on the ball screen, but scout heavy, pack line type defense. Offensively, it's all based on player personnel. So my first year, we had really good ball guys off ball screens, 1-3 could use them. So we did a lot of, you know, European, you know, reverse through the two bigs and back cut, different stuff like that with some stagger endings. And then my next 3 years, we did a little bit more dribble drive type stuff, and then evolved with a lot of the quick hitters. Last year, we were a lot, it was like dribble drive, but like mostly ball screens. And why it was, Sean Fulcher was probably the best scorer in the country. Dude averaged 19 points a game and played 22 minutes. Didn't even start most of the year because he wouldn't go to class. But, you know, for everything else, like, he was really good. Give him the ball, get out of the way. Like, you got to let your players play. This year, this is the best passing team I've ever had, best shooting team I've ever had. And we have, like, true position. Like, we have a 6'10 five man. We have a 6'8 five man, another 6'8 five man. And then our fours are, like, athletic but can post, and they're strong. So we have three of those dudes. And then we have some – the D1 transfer can shoot it. We signed the best shooter in Europe. He shot 49% from three in the EABL, which is the top league in Europe. And then we have three really good guards with Jaron Cruz, a kid from DMAC. And then Orlandis Keys, who started half the year for us, averaged 9 a game. And then Jordan Glenn Hawkins, who averaged 11 a game last year for us. And they were both in the shadows of our two D1 wing, our two D1 point guards, and then our D1 wing. And then we had two D1 fives. And so it's their time to shine. And then we have a D2 transfer that started half the games for us last year, was one of the top offensive rebounders in the country. And he could play the one of the five. Or one of the four. He's like a 6'6 hybrid, 200-pound guy. So, like, we have, like, extreme depth. And how we play will just depend on what we need to do to win. And, you know, I think if we can get it to the point where it doesn't matter who shoots it, it's going to be fun to watch. Because our defense is going to score. And so as long as we move the basketball, which we saw this summer. Like, I think Jaron Cruz had more assists in 10 games than my other point guards did all year. And that was in the summer with no plays and a running clock games. Like, if we just move the ball, like, I think we're capable of, it'll be really fun. But this year, I may do a little Davidson stuff because I have true fours and fives, and it forces you to swing. And at the end, all it takes is one breakdown, and then we'll just play basically, you know, like closeout basketball. Like, you create a closeout, now it's just playing. And our offense is actually called just play. Like, just play, guys. Like, just play. And these are the entries we can use to do it. So I've evolved, you know, quick hitters. I'm big on figure out what we don't do well and fixing it, or doing what we do and double downing on it. So whatever that is, I don't really care. Whatever it takes to win, get guys the ball. But, you know, I think for the first time ever, we have like a little bit of a pecking order. So roles will be more defined. Our four man is special. He's already got 5-on-1 offers. He's talking to LSU. He's talking to NC State, Xavier, I mean, Iowa. He's really good. And he just went and worked out with some people, and I mean, he's good, man. I might just give him the ball sometimes.
There you go. I'd say you got me excited. Got me excited for Ellsworth basketball. I bet everybody else listening too has got to be pretty excited to see how things shake out. So you talked about playing this summer, that you guys played in the summer series, or take me through a little bit of that. And is this something new, or is this something they've been doing for a while, or how's this work?
Relatively new. So I think they started it in 2000. It was a year before COVID, because the second year we didn't. Yeah. So whatever that was, 2019, summer 19.
Yeah.
And so what it is there's 2 weeks. So when they restructured all the AAU stuff, they restructured the summer stuff. They went to these high school team things. There was nothing for JUCO. They have these individual events, top 100, you know, Brandon Gold does one, J48. They do another one in Atlanta. It's like top 100 something, but it's like 180 kids. During the summer, those two were in July. And so what they did is they made 2 weekends in June live, and you're allowed to practice. So you go practice. So we brought our kids in a week before. We played in Iowa. There's only 7 teams because most teams don't have enough players yet. We had just happened to have 10. So 10 of my 20 were here. And so, you know, we put in our budget, we fundraised. So we went to Iowa and we played Seward, Tyler, Texas, Kirkwood, and then Western Iowa Tech, which is a new team in our league this year, out of Sioux City. Sorry. And then we went to Alabama. So that was a long drive. Me and my assistant both drove vans. We got an Airbnb and we stayed in this like country house. There was a pool. Guys had a blast. When we went and we played some of the top JUCOs down there. So we played Pearl River, Northeast, East Mississippi, Chippewa, and then we played South Georgia State. And so we swept the Iowa part and then we went 4-1. We lost our last game, which is awesome. Because being 10-0 would have been like, base probably too big for our heads right now.
Yeah, right.
But we lost the last game. We ran out of gas. One of our guys got hurt. So we just kind of, couldn't quite finish the game. We lost by 4, but good game. We just couldn't make a shot. Long story short, we went there. It's a relatively new thing. It's good to get your guys in earlier in the summer. You get to develop them. You get to know what you got. It's good for referees. They do these referee clinics with it. Tom McDonald's the best commissioner probably in junior college, and he runs our league, and he ran two of them. He's always been one of the, mover shaker guys to try and get NJCA equal with NCAA, big member of the NABC. And Tom does a really good job of like advocating for our league. And this year too, a unique thing is, so D2 JUCO, it used to be 16 at large bids, or not at large bids. No, 16 automatic bids. Sorry.
Yeah.
Now they're adding 4 at large bids. So our league, probably last year, Kirkwood would have got in. Maybe DMAC is like an outside chance. And we were right, right at the top 20 mark. Probably when we lost a couple games down the stretch. So this year, I built my schedule around this with the intention of hopefully, you know how it is, like the rankings, sometimes they matter a little bit. I mean, I'm not too big into it. But now that at-larges matter, if you can start in the top 5-10, you're probably going to stay there if you can continue winning, which will put you in a position to get an at-large if you happen to not win the league. So with us playing competitive schedule, going 7-1 against D1 JUCOs, we're going to play a more competitive schedule this fall when we do our jamborees as well. We'll have probably 30 games under our belt. Maybe not that many, 20 games under our belt against top teams. And that may be an advocate for us to, say, hey, we should be a top 5 team to start the season. It's like college football playoff. Like Alabama starts 1, like the lowest they get is 10 and they're always there. They're the 1-2 loss team or they're 1-1 loss team. It's no different. And I think, Ellsworth is not a common name. And so we had to do something last year to get it going. And then we're going to do the same thing, but we're going to double down on it. So, this will be, there's a little bit of politics in there too.
That's neat. So you kind of mentioned a little bit about it. Is the game format, it's a little bit different. Obviously, you mentioned it's kind of more running clock. It's kind of AAU type. Yep.
That's basically it is. AAU. We went 5-in, 5-out a lot. In games, I was really trying to win early. The one in Alabama was 45-minute running clock.
Wow.
No halftime. I think you got 3 30-second timeouts. It was like, I would take one just to rest.
A controlled scrimmage almost.
Yeah, it's hard to manage, man. It's hard to manage. Those jamborees are hard to manage. But, when you get to just go out and play. And then the craziest thing, I talked a little bit about officials, but they'd have like 11 guys doing your game. So, middle of the game, they'd cycle guys through because they were doing a clinic. So, pull you out, put a new guy in, on the fly. I was like, hockey. They were just subbing in the officials at the same time. So, you had no feel. You'd be turn around. And I was going to yell at that person as they're walking by, and it was a different person. I can't even talk to you. You weren't even out. You probably weren't even watching the game. You could have been in the bathroom. It's a different feel. It's all good. It's all good to play summer basketball. It's good. And then, coaches could see us. Something that helped us.
It's like a showcase kind of too.
Yeah, we went to, here we go. It was at Columbus State in Georgia. And that's where Saluse, our 7-footer, he picked up offers from Cincinnati and Wichita State, and had some Arizona State offered him after that summer. Dior Davis got a few. I thought some guys were going to leave. I was really paranoid that we were going to lose some guys for going. One of my guys at my last school just did that. He went and played in one of the showcases this summer. Isaac Price, he signed with Iona 2 days ago. Was just talking to Tobin on the phone because, the other assistant basically did all the work, but he was visiting. I was there all the way through, helped get him signed, and then I left. And so he just signed at Iona, well, you're not going to find another Mississippi in-state kid that's 6'6" that can do a 360 in the air. Like,
yeah,
my old assistant is now the head coach. They're going to be have to change how he's playing now.
Gonna have to mix things up. Jeez, that's awesome. That's a good, that's a neat opportunity to be able to go and do some of those things. And obviously with the rules continuing to change and the contact and the time in which coaches at all levels are able to spend with these kids in the summers, you know, around here for a long time, whether it was, you know, the Primetime League in Iowa City or the Cap City League where those college kids would go and play. I mean, they've always been playing, but now they have the opportunity to play with their teammates, play with their coaches. You kind of heard both sides of it, I guess, as far as from a contact to a workload to a development, what all this means. But until you go out there and you do it a little bit and kind of learn from it and see what works, it's kind of how we got to continue to grow and evolve. Because if not, the game will get left behind. And honestly, it feels like college basketball as a whole, as we navigate through some of NIL, is in a really good spot. Specifically here in Iowa, you talked about the league is super competitive league, as most of the leagues are in Iowa. I mean, we are absolutely blessed with the amount of talent that we have from every level, from high school all the way up through all the college ranks. And so it's really great. And it's awesome to honestly have you, coach, and to have you here and instilling your philosophy and learning and watching a little bit more as your program grows throughout the years. But we can't let you go, right, Adam? We got one more thing we got to hit coach with before we get him out of here, right?
Yeah, we like to end our episodes with a little section we call Rapid Fire, where we're going to hit you with a few questions about hoops and quite a few that are not about hoops. So you let us know what comes to your head off the top of your head.
It'll be dangerous. Let's go.
All right, coach. First one we always start with is favorite visiting gym or arena you've had the opportunity to coach in. Now you've been all over, you've seen a lot. You've been in a lot of different places. And so what was a visiting gym that you walked into, whether one time or several times, where you're like, this is sweet. I love being here. I love coaching here. I love being in this atmosphere.
Yeah. Michigan State was pretty cool. They got those newspapers in the bags and they pop them when they first, you know, when they score their first basket, like it's like the game was over the second they made their first basket. Crazy. Ohio State has these things in the student section. I don't know if they still do it. They literally had a piece of paper that had everything about all of our players. Now with social media, it's probably easier. They knew like girlfriend names, and it was right after Saul got his DUI with Minnesota that summer. Literally every time he took a sip of anything, they were just heckling him. Like, you wouldn't believe. It was crazy. They were messing with the water boys, like the whole everything. And I swear they put something in some of our drinks behind our bench. They were something in there. We had to like dump out our Powerade. Dude, there's some wild stuff. But actually the coolest story I'll share is University of Illinois. Every year they take a trip. They actually got in trouble last year because they lied what the trip was about. I don't know if you saw that article, but Illinois student section would go to another
visit. Oh, yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
They went to Minnesota one year. And so we were playing Illinois. It was right after it was 2006. So I think they went to the national title in 2005, maybe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, D. Brown, Luther Head, Deron Williams, those guys. And so they were like, there's this extra student section in the upper deck of Williams Arena. And I was like, wow, this game, I can't believe we've got all these students here. Literally the game starts, they take off their shirts and they had orange shirts underneath. And they threw their Minnesota shirts like down onto the floor. And it was crazy. There was like 1,000 of them and they were just going bananas the whole time. The Orange Crush. It's pretty cool.
That's awesome. Good. Those are good.
Sorry, that's too long.
No, that's good. No, you're good. You're good. That's it. We just called that because we have some random questions. But okay, so second one then, game day routine. Is there something in it that you got to do? What does your routine look like on game day? How does your prep or whatever you got to do change a little bit?
Yeah, so I have this sheet. I call it my game sheet. So the game sheet has every one of our plays, and I go through it, and I highlight what I think will work. You know, I do that throughout the week, but, like, I just double-check. It's like taking a quiz. I review the personnel and what we're doing. Sometimes I ask my assistant a couple of questions. And then, you know, I actually go – my daughter goes to daycare till 5:15, so our games are later here. So I go and I pick her up, bring her home. I take a quick shower. I always shower. It's just my thing. And, you know, put on my suit or whatever for a home game, or, you know, hit the road if it's a road game. But try and be present, try and do everything. But when I come through – and then when I go on the road, I love to eat a bag of popcorn. So I could tell you which venues has the best popcorn out there. So
there we go.
Who's got the best popcorn in the league then?
Oh, right now the popcorn at DMAC was really freaking good.
Good to know.
There we go. Can't go wrong with that. Favorite sports movie?
Probably Hardball. Keanu Reeves, the little kids.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
That's a good little film. I love that movie. And G Baby, what's up? You know, the songs from it. That's more of a college side movie. Air Bud was really good, but
Hardball, yeah. I love it when you call me Big Papa.
Yeah. Your hands in the air if you're a true
player. Yeah,
that's right. So this actually fits in perfect. You talked about growing up kind of being a baseball kid at heart initially. Who's the greatest baseball player of all time?
That's hard. I guess I'll just go with Babe Ruth just because of like what it is, you know, who he was. I grew up a Cardinal fan. My dad loved baseball. So the Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa thing was like during my prime of my, you know, you have the Jordan stuff, you have that. You know, I was obsessed with that race and would listen to the games on the radio, you know, doing stuff like that. So, you know, but I got to go with Babe Ruth. That's everybody, you know, everyone knew who he was, even like young people, like they know that name, whether it's a candy bar, whether it's, you know, going up to bat, you always said it. So I'll give it to him.
There you go. That's a good answer. Do you have an all-time favorite basketball shoe?
Shoe, I've always been a Nike guy, but I can't say that because I've been Adidas for the last 6 years. You know, but yeah, I just, you know, any type of Nike basketball shoe, you'd laugh. I got one shoe a year, probably up until like sixth grade. Like that was our school shoe, and you got to pick one. I always picked a basketball shoe because I knew I was going to play at recess and different things. And that was always the one from Kohl's or JCPenney.
That was your one.
Love it. Love it. Love it.
That's good. All-time starting five. So you got five players you can run out there, whatever, however you want to do it. Who's your all-time starting five?
I will go Jordan, Kobe, LeBron, Curry, and I need a big. Probably Bill Russell.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good mix. I like that. Yeah.
Maybe Shaq. Like Shaq was the most dominant player. The Shaq story, so – Ryan Saunders and I shared an office together. So Ryan's was the head coach of the Timberwolves.
Yeah.
So his career ended short. So he was like with us with Minnesota. And then he was like a GA. He was like finishing his degree. I don't even know what his title was. But Flip would come around a lot. And so Flip would come and speak with Tubby Smith. And we would be in the office a lot. And Flip would go through all these different things. And he used to talk all the time about like different guys and comparing to mismatches. He said Shaq was the hardest player to prepare for than any other player ever in history of the NBA because he was so dominant inside and you had so much focal point on that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, he would always talk about that. Like it would always come up. I don't know why, but like, you know how it is like, oh, who's a goat? Who's a goat? No, dude would be like Shaq. Like you could not guard Shaq. He was so big and so dominant that you could not like move him. You had to game play something. If you doubled and you had to work on your rotations for 3 days until you played him, like it was impossible.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about. I mean, it's like Shaq's still everywhere. We see Shaq all the time. But like when you see those highlights of like Shaq, like late Magic into LA, like his was impossible. Like there was nothing you were going to do with that guy to be able to stop him. He was unreal. So, all right, two more, Coach. We'll get you out of here. You got us all amped up and ready for some Ellsworth basketball this year. So we make the trip up to Iowa Falls. Where do we got to go and eat? Where's the best spot to eat in Iowa Falls before we come?
I have a brewery at Timbuk Brew. They've been really good to us. You know, they actually did a fan trip last year.
That's cool.
And they went to Iowa Central and, you know, did that. So you got to get a brew at Timbuk Brew. I like the 502. It's not a bad local spot, but Las Flores is probably my favorite Mexican place in town. It's right down the street. Good lunch special. They get you in and out quick. Like me and my wife went there a couple days ago, literally in 3 minutes. They had your food out there. They're rolling people in and out, but that's a pretty good Mexican restaurant. Yeah, so that's what I would tell you to do. You know, you gotta
handle that.
Go to the facilities.
We can definitely handle that. So perfect. All right, Coach, last one. We'll get you out of here then. What's the best thing about having the opportunity to be the head coach at Ellsworth Community College?
Just say impact. You know, it's changed my life. The game has changed my life so much in terms of like, they say like knowledge and they say like different things, experiences change who you are. But being a head coach has changed my awareness. My awareness of what's going on around myself and other people's lives. And if you think of it through other people's eyes first, like it changes how you do things. So you know, just the impact that you're able to make on people's lives, not only your players, but like people love sports. There's unpredictability of sport and, you know, the NCAA tournament, different things. Like there's something about being attached to something and being proud of it and being not control, but like being in charge of something that people care about, like makes you want it even more. I think like the level of care and the impact that you can make through teaching and coaching a game of basketball that I get paid to be a part of every day is awesome. Like you can't take that away. You can't take that feeling away. And I try not to get caught up in feelings, but I think that emotion is such a huge part of our daily lives. And one thing we're going to really focus on this year is responding rather than reacting. And I think that if you really focus on those things, there's so much to be learned that'll change your life. How to respond, how to be aware, how to impact others. Like you're going to live a better life. It's guaranteed. Gratitude, humility, like the things that we talked about before. Like that's what coaching is. That's what it should be about. And we can work as hard as we want towards something and nothing's ever guaranteed. And like, that's just the way the world is, man. Like nothing prepares you more for adversity than sports, especially basketball. Because game's so continuous. The game is so fast. And any like every detail matters, you know, and it's fun. It's fun. You can make the craziest play and still lose. You can, you know, you could have everything go the wrong way and you still win. Like
this is a fun game. Couldn't agree with you more, Coach. Absolutely couldn't agree with you more. That I always say it too, and I tell my kids that too. It's a game where there's so many things happening at one time. There's just it's like life, just throwing a lot at you at once and seeing how you handle it. Like you mentioned, emotion is a big part of the game too, and how you respond to it oftentimes determines what the result and the outcome comes. And so, Coach, we appreciate it. We appreciate you taking some time with us, sitting down and chatting, learning a little bit more about your story, your team, your future. We're definitely excited for you. We'll look forward to this year, following your guys' journey this year and into the future. And so best of luck. And again, appreciate you taking some time with us.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Coach. It was great talking to you. And as Brian said, excited for Ellsworth basketball and looking forward to following you guys this year.
Oh, good.